Hey, everybody, and welcome to Cancel Proof. I'm Paul Escanone here with Jason Rink, and it's been a little bit since we've done a show. Jason, you've been out and about traveling the world. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I just got back from Washington, D.C. I was back.
How is the swamp
well,
at this time of year?
Number one, it was pretty cold. When I left Austin, Texas, it was 90 here. I get there, and it's like in the 20s and 30s. Like, what's going on with that?
Yeah, I was in Michigan a little bit while you were out there, and it was very cold, and I was very unprepared, and I was like, this is terrible.
It's very uncomfortable.
And us weak Southerners.
The interesting thing was I was revisiting. I was in D.C. 3 months ago, and not even. It was 2 to 3 months ago. And when I was there last time, it was mandatory vaccine cards to get into restaurants.
That's right.
And, you know, that was like a short-lived policy, but it was like, that's as serious as the lockdown measures really were that's as serious of authoritarianism as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mandatory vaccines to go into a bar, restaurant, whatever it is. So what was interesting was when I went back this time, that was all gone. And in fact, like, there really wasn't anybody wearing masks anywhere. I was out at the Lincoln Memorial and, you know, Washington Monument. And it ended up warming up. It was probably in the 60s the last day I was there. And it was hundreds of people, you know, all around. And I'm looking around, I'm like, there's no mask. So it was just crazy how
in this short period of time,
it's like goes totally the other way. What I can tell you is that people have no appetite to lock down again. Like,
once the
freedom happens, you could see it, man. You could see the vibe that people were like really enjoying being out. Doing life, you know, in the city and whatnot. And so, anyway, that was going on. I'm getting ready to go down to Miami to Bitcoin conference for a little work as well.
Yeah, very nice.
So I'm heading down to there. But yeah, in the meantime, we wanted to knock out a show while we were in the same city together.
That's right. We're here in the same town. And I'm really excited about the show today. We are going to bring on a guest for the second time on the Cancel Proof show. And this is a good friend of ours. And with the big news of the day, of course, being Elon Musk, 9.2% stake now as a owner, the largest individual shareholder of Twitter, I woke up to that news and it's like, oh my goodness, the madman actually did it. And so with that news comes a lot of speculation, a lot of what ifs and questions about what's going to happen and what does it mean. And Ali Alexander, we're going to welcome him here on the show to get his thoughts and his insights on this really fascinating situation.
Welcome, Ali.
What's up, fellas? Jason, Paul. It's nice to be on Cozy. You know, it's really interesting. I can't wait to join Cozy myself, but, you know, congratulations on the start that you guys have gotten. You're almost at 1,000 followers. And so I just want to encourage everybody, if you're here and you're new to Cozy, sign up for Cozy. You just link it with your Telegram account and then definitely follow Cancel Proof, the podcast.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, we really appreciate it. To have you on Cozy would be awesome, like you just talked about. And you know, you put out some really cool stuff on Telegram today, and I follow you on Telegram, and I think I actually saw your post through Nick Fuentes' post on kind of like your take on what's going on. There was a big Revolver piece that came out 3 days ago about sort of the what ifs if Elon was to purchase Twitter, and they looked at, you know, majority ownership, and obviously now we know that there's the number floating out there is 9.2%. Can you tell us, big picture, sort of, how should we frame this? How should we see what he's done? What's going on here?
Yeah, well, you know, I haven't read the Revolver piece yet. I keep intending to, and then I get pretty busy. So we'll see if some of our analysis lines up or if we differ, you know. But what I'll say is that Elon Musk essentially for $3 billion bought a title, and that is the largest shareholder that Twitter has. And when you really, really think about that, he didn't cross over the 10% threshold. Which is a special threshold, would have made him a lot more active or whatever. But he did decide to buy that top spot. And this is pretty significant. So the way I'm looking at it is that this is Elon's opening volley. And I think that it's perfect to be met by kind of his silence or his, oh, hi there tweet, because we're already seeing good things come from it. You have Twitter staffers who are responsible for regulating speech, deciding that they don't want to be offended or work for someone. And it's kind of strange if you're an employee at Twitter and you don't know what a publicly traded company is. It's really good so far. And so I look forward to seeing what's act two, what's act three of what Elon's going to do. But there's, you know, there's a lot of misconceptions and rumors. And part of this stems from a cultural problem we have in the conservative movement, where we're so invested in ideology and our family and our communities that we don't actually understand how Wall Street works. So I saw a rumor going around that these were non-voting shares. Well, Twitter only has one class of stock. It's a voting share. You know, I saw some things going around that he won't be able to influence the company unless he owns 51%. That basically hasn't been done since the 50s or something like that. You know, you don't need a majority stock. You don't even need a quarter of the company's stock to heavily influence. And in fact, in 2020, when Twitter reached its last settlement with an outside shareholder, it was about 5% or less between Elliott Management and Silver Lake. So anyway, I'm looking at something that potentially looks awesome, because whether it's Twitter's destruction or Twitter employees quitting or firing, or, you know, the outside chance that he could rejuvenate Twitter and make it more fair, you know, I'm game for any of those scenarios.
I wanted to mention something. You know, it's interesting because he buys the stock, right? You know, some people thought maybe this was going to happen. There was like a little bit of a, you know, he went and put some feelers out. People were like, is he going to buy Twitter? What's going to happen here? And so I thought it was interesting that when this got announced, like the stock went up like 27%, you know? So it's interesting because that means that the speculation that he was going to buy it wasn't really priced in before the announcement happened. And I think it says something about what people in the marketplace think about the direction that Twitter has been going. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a special phrase that the audience should become aware of, is priced in. You know, when you really think about like what is a price, okay, and especially what is a stock price, it is what are we all aware of, and then what is kind of the time horizon of what we expect and our expectations. And prices don't just move up and down because of the cost of making them, and likewise with shares of stock, they go up and down because of, you know, kind of this near immediate horizon that no one can really put their finger on, and the expectations. That's why companies and share prices trade many multiples over, you know, their earnings, because, you know, ideally it's not okay if the company liquidates tomorrow, which I do think was the first vision of kind of publicly trading shares, was, okay, I own a share of the company, and if I cash it in tomorrow, this is what it's worth. Well, you know, game theory, I always say, is the forbidden fruit. And we humans have a tendency to keep thinking longer and longer and longer. And so the crashes are going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And so what's interesting is, I don't think anyone should have assumed that Elon was going to buy a sake of Twitter. I mean, Twitter is dead. Twitter is still dead. There's a lot of people now betting that there's a possibility that Elon can resurrect it. And that's how I kind of look at it. The main crux of the question was.
Well, I said, you know, the idea that it does have that big increase in share price, I think, is an indicator about what people in the country think about this new direction compared to where it was. And I think it's an indicator that he's got some support for taking it in this other direction, like just getting that bit of stock where he's making an investment in it, and knowing what his position is on, you know, issues of freedom and free speech. I think that the share price going up to the degree it did, it should be an indicator to the people involved at Twitter that the Elon Musk direction is where people would like to see that company go.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple things happening, and this is, you know, where some of the criticisms of late stage capitalism prove, I think, more right. And that is, one, the proliferation of the retail investor. So this is the person on Robinhood, Public, E-Trade. We are at the long tail of stock investing. And then for a lot of people, myself included, this means that we are about to witness probably an apocalyptic crash, you know, sometime, you know, I don't know, just let's just say in the next decade or two. And I'm talking apocalyptic, something that that ends public markets and then starts a cycle of private markets. And because why would the elites let us trade in their market? They're okay with our passive investments. And so that's 401ks, retirement, pension funds, et cetera. But it, to the degree that that normal people invest in companies and have a say in them, especially companies like Twitter, where it has one class of stock and people can vote, that's an existential threat to Wall Street. It is an existential threat to Wall Street that we decentralize. And so the first thing is I would say is that more than the market, although retail investing is truer of the market forces and truer of what consumers think and capitalism, there's no system that's really ever been built for that. There's no system of capitalism or publicly trading stock in any country, in any era, that has actually had the demand of the public. So that's the first thing I think about. The second thing I think about is that companies are divorced from their stock in a bad way. And that is that we had some court decisions, you know, years ago that said that that boards of directors and CEOs, chief executives, these C-suite people, they do not have, their primary duty is not fiduciary. And I mean, this was a serious parting of the president. So what it allowed is for virtue signalers to run companies and then not get sued by shareholders for keeping profit first. Okay, so now you can say, oh, well, I'm going to make a profit, and that can mean nothing. But you know, I'm going to factor in the climate or black people or women or white people or whatever into my decisions and the branding and the brand and this elusive advertising and brand awareness and brand reputation will affect the profit. So it essentially eliminated, you know, what's called standing in a court, shareholder lawsuits. And courts have always been in favor of that, and the business community has always been in favor of it. And then I would say the other side of the coin is also true, in that companies are divorced in a good way from their share price. And that is that there was a lot of misconceptions from conservatives that Elon Musk was funding Twitter. Okay, none of the money that he invested went to Twitter, the company. They don't get a percentage, you know, of the transaction. He's not paying for any salaries at Twitter. There are other people holding stock. He bought their stock. And so this is the consumer to the consumer buying, you know, a percentage of the company so that he can meme magic it. And that's essentially, you know, what activism shareholding is, you know, and activism investing is. And so, now what's interesting is that, you know, on his disclosure form, he said he has no intentions of acquiring the company or starting a fist fight with the company. He can amend that whenever he wants. So I'd say, you know, it's really, to me, it's interesting because as I examine what's happening now, and I've said this before when I had a Twitter account, is that no one gets the market like Elon does. And Elon put his money where his mouth is. He dared the SEC to throw him in jail, which would have popped a bubble in the market. And so there was political pressure from the Trump White House and the Senate and Congress for the SEC not to do anything. The SEC does not want to pop the bubble. They're active in pumping the bubble. And so Elon, when he learned that the moral hazard applied to him, this is kind of meta criticisms, he gaslit the market. And then the Bitcoin, the Doge, and all that other stuff followed. So I tell people it might be tough to tell what Elon believes, but that's because you're putting it on this like holistic arc where he's trying to prove a point every time. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, he's a gray hat and you just have to accept it, I think.
You know, it's a really good point about him being a gray hat. You know, I've seen all across the board the response to this from people going, Elon Musk, he's not our friend. You know, Neuralink is the downfall of humanity. Look what he's involved with. He's billionaire class. And then, you know, kind of like more where I'm at, it's like, hey, let's celebrate when a person does a good thing that helps humanity. And one can argue that if Elon Musk is allowed, you know, is allowed to operate now from within Twitter and bring Twitter back to once again, truly, you know, what did they used to be? The free speech wing of the free speech party. And how quickly did that shift? You know, we saw Google, you know, they have an IPO. Don't be evil. How quickly did that seem to shift? So, you know, I'm like, hey, let's give the guy a chance. We don't need to have a full-throated endorsement of whatever Elon is or what he believes, but this could be a really positive thing. So what are some of the reactions out there that you've seen just today, and how do you answer some of those criticisms?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the reactions are all over the map, like you said. You know, I'm not a fan of electric vehicles. I'm not really a fan of SpaceX, and I'm not really a fan of Neuralink. There's no reason for me to like anything that Elon's doing, except for, you know, you have to celebrate when someone is trolling your enemies. I mean, why not? And it's and there's two ways to celebrate. I think I've talked about this before with Nick, but like, in one way, we could look at the drag queen at the public school and say, that's an ally, because they are bringing forward what the corporate left doesn't want us to see. And it is outside of the Overton window. Now that it has moved into not being policed or not being punished, still doesn't put it inside the Overton window. And a lot of conservatives just give up, which then puts it in the Overton window. And so again, like I tell you, it's like there's some game theory going on that's just stupid, just really stupid. Like, we voluntarily disarm when we really don't have to. And so one, just, you know, tactically, Elon Musk is not our enemy, not on this matter, certainly not on this matter. That he is attacking an enemy should be applauded and supported. We shouldn't just be neutral. We should support it. And now, what are Elon's aims? He will have to articulate that. You know, the idea, I mean, this is something I really hate, where I really feel like I'm living in this like sub normal IQ world is, you know, news should report events that happen. Okay. So Elon bought the stock 3 weeks ago at the latest. We become aware of it now. People are acting like something happened today. And he didn't declare what his intentions are. And so people are assuming. I mean, it's just all ego. It's all ego. And this is the same reason why people can't understand Kanye West. I got a lot of people when Kanye appeared with Joel Osteen, Ali, do you approve? Do you approve? And I was like, it's not my place to approve. What the hell are you talking about? And if Jesus would visit the woman at the well, why couldn't Kanye visit Joel Osteen? There's a lot of people who think Joel Osteen's witnessing to Ye. Ye might be witnessing to Joel Osteen. And it was just like, it was kind of like you, like, we've been bruised. We've been battered. We've been like most of the right sucks. They are so stunted in just like letting something happen and then being responsive to that thing instead of a reactionary. And I've argued that, you know, I'm not in favor of reactionaryism or neo-reactionism because, you know, we ought to be responsive. But the idea that you would let something govern you before it is what it is, that's all fear. It leads to hate. It leads to anger. You damn your soul in the process. You become something you don't want. You end up becoming exactly what your opponents designed. And then especially if you understand how evil operates, which isn't presenting you with a polar opposite contention, but inverting your belief, then you actually understand you really are fueling. You really, really, really destroy yourself. And so, you know, these are high IQ thoughts, but, you know, we got to get the movement on board with supporting things that hurt our enemies, especially if they're done by allies per issue. And we all need to get right, you know. A lot of libertarians, you know, need to get right. A lot of conservatives need to get right. And a lot of Christians need to get active. And the inability to kind of see our own error. And it's kind of interesting. We can't accept Elon because he's not wholly us. And yet we're clinging to an ideology that does not address the whole of all issues. It's really a clown show. And so, yeah, I've seen every reaction from everybody. And I just think it's so stupid. It is so, so stupid. He bought a steak. Get over it. He's not doing it for money. I mean, that's right. What we know. He's not doing it to flip a dime. You know, in fact, if he was doing it to flip a dime, we should applaud that, because then he's going to abuse people with the stock and they'll never buy it again. So there's no scenario in which Elon did something that hurts the right. There's no scenario. There's just none.
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, the people who got behind
the
Trump,
sheeple?
Right? What's that?
Yeah. The sheeple or the people?
The people, the deplorables,
okay.
Us who got behind,
oh, okay.
The people who
yeah,
got behind Trump
people.
And the populist movement and the populist right, let's just, you know, whatever we want to call it. Many times I think we're so desperate for like heroes or people who are even take up for us that, you know, we've seen this time and time again where, you know, they'll get behind people who really don't have their best interest. They just say one good thing that sounds like they're on our side. And it's like, oh, great. You know, wow. They're with us. Whoever it is. Nicki Minaj said something good. Let's like lauder. And it's like, so on one hand, I think that is present sometimes because the people have been so beaten down, you know, by the other side and by these rich elites who are using their money and power to accomplish things that are anti-liberty, that do not support the ends that we would like to see happen. And so there's that on one side. Then on the other side, you've got people who I think do have some ideological alignment, you know? And I think Elon Musk is somebody who's got some ideological alignment with those of us in this populist movement. Like, I definitely think if we sat down across from Elon Musk and heard him talk about all of his different political positions and all the things that he believed, there'd be plenty of things to disagree about. But, you know, we saw him get chased out of California in a very real way. You know, representatives basically said, you know, F Elon Musk, you know, and he was like, yeah, that's fine. I'll go to Texas, right? And so he gets a lot of things that do matter to those of us who are out here trying to struggle to make ends meet, to live our lives, to get the government out of our way, and understanding the crushing thing of free speech. And probably, you know, I think about how he's probably witnessed some of the things that even guys like Joe Rogan have gone up against. You know, Elon famously went on the Joe Rogan show, and it's like he sees some of these guys even with big platforms and sees what the media and the left and the establishment is trying to do. And so I think he's a guy that we should give a chance to give him some credit for what he's doing, and that he does have some things that we would have alignment on. And like, I think on the free speech issue, it's like, hey, listen, let's make a single issue coalition about it. And it is nice to see somebody who's got the means to sort of take a position and take a stake and maybe able to just use that stake to maneuver or to move the company in another direction. And we'll see how it plays out, but it's friggin' exciting. I think, I think it's it feels a little bit like a rebellion in a way, like, and again, I don't know. It gives me a little bit of hope, I guess, to see this happen and to say, hey, wait a minute. We don't know where this is going to go, and it could be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, if this is a culture war, we need resources. The idea that there's a $3 billion injection, and by the way, Republican donors aren't doing this.
Yeah.
Conservative donors aren't doing this. Christian billionaires aren't doing this. So no one else is fighting the fight. And so the idea that, you know, this libertarian who is frankly moving more right, you know, we're all moving more right. And, you know, that he's going to pick a fight with, you know, one of our enemies that's, again, dead, you know, and we might convert them. You know, we might convert the company. Now, I don't know if that's possible. But if you would think about it, the one billionaire who could sabotage the company, but then offer be a poster boy for talent recruitment to build something better or to reform it, that could only be Elon.
Yeah,
this could be. I mean, this could all be in the plan, and you know, but there's not really anybody else who could have come in and gone to war with the staff if the staff quit, you know, it's like, well, who's going to come and repair everything? Well, a lot of people want to work for Elon. And even though this isn't working for Elon, a lot of people, there's people in the Valley who would say, okay, I'm going to out myself as a civil libertarian and, you know, go work at that company. And, you know, so I, you know, this is really, really interesting. And, you know, and frankly, like, Twitter is the world's most influential newspaper in the world. You know, yeah, if anything, we need fewer tweets of crazy batshit stuff being said and posted in the newspapers and cable television, broadcast television. So, you know, anything that really stops what Twitter's doing is a net win for us. And on the Nicki Minaj thing, we should praise people's speech and people's actions. We don't have to praise people.
Right.
You know, and or their lifestyles. I mean, when I think about the things that I'm most opposed to in life, Neuralink is number two, you know? So, you know, if he ever rolls that out, which I, you know, I don't know if he actually will, you know, I'll be someone who protests it physically, you know, I'll chain myself to a Neuralink shop or something, but, you know, this isn't that fight.
Ollie, I wanted to ask you about a post that you made on Telegram. You posted a five-part, I don't know if it's a list of demands or suggestions or requests, feature requests for Elon. And I just wanted to see if you wanted to talk about those, maybe talk about one or two of those or just the whole list. But I thought it was really interesting. I'll just read number one. You said, Elon, number one, and I like this one, reset the suspensions. Implement a time-based suspension system. That, to me, would be music to my ears, to know what you're suspended for and know when it's going to last, and maybe you get another shot. And Andrew Torba has talked about this at Gab when he was on Tim Pool. They said, what about a lifetime suspension? He's like, you know, I kind of like the idea of forgiveness. I think we live in a world where we should get another chance. And if a user wants to come back and they're not going to do the thing that got them banned, and this is Gab, right? So you got to be pretty wild to get banned off Gab. Right. You know, I think that's a really good approach to services, not just social media services, banking services, PayPal, all this other stuff that people are getting banned from. So anyways, let's go back to your list. I'd love to just hear your thoughts on some quick tweaks maybe that Elon could make if he was able to get his hands in there and change some things.
Well, I mean, I don't have the list in front of me, so you have to read it, but, you know,
Number two, eliminate all editorial content at Twitter. Maybe you could speak into that one a little
bit. Super important. It's the number one missed thing because all of the people who are running right-wing alternatives are either not techies or they're techies with an ego. And I mean, that's just across the board. They don't even get it. They literally do not get it. And I don't know why nobody's listened. But anyway, I'll get off that up. When you present editorial content, you are influencing the masses. The impression in the eye is the meme to the brain. And, you know, frankly, both the Luciferians talk about, you know, the eye, and the Bible talks about the eye being the lamp. And so what people need to understand is by seeing something and having an impression of it, there is a belief happening in your head. And a lot of people, again, and this is kind of the whole basis of small L liberalism or libertarianism or any of these ideas or capitalism that think that we can all be economic units or passive neutral units, that does not exist in this universe. And so, you know, and Kanye's talked about this with billboards that advertise spirits or pornography. You know, how things become a gateway. You know, there's no reason for anything to become a gateway unless there was an impression happening in your brain that started an itch, but then got desensitized. And so you would want to escalate it yourself. And then that's a form of your, you know, will. And so anyway, editorial content like on Gitter is so leaned pro Ukraine stuff in contrast and so pro one particular podcast that it doesn't offer the other points of view. And likewise, Gab has a column that really focuses on almost anarcho-Christendom. And you know, that's fine. I like existing in multiple spaces, But I don't want people who run a company to influence anything. What ends up happening is it starts with, who am I going to give the verified check mark to? Okay, well, who am I, who am a suggested account when you first sign up, then going to retweet? Now I'm sharing my platform with my own personal view. Then it's like I get false positives because I'm the founder and I'm sharing this person. And then I see that the person I'm sharing has a lot of views. I decide to feature their content in the sidebar. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that all started with ego. And so I'm not one of these people who misunderstands Section 230. Everyone who is a publisher is also a platform, and every platform is a publisher. People on the right just butcher the shit out of this, okay? There's no designation for I'm a publisher or I'm a platform. It depends on what you're doing. The New York Times, when they write something, they're writing as a publisher. The comment section is a platform. The liability laws apply differently, literally on the same page, depending on where it falls on the page. Not enough people on the right have ever understood this issue. Failure to understand this issue still comes, like I say, at a philosophical level, where they're not understanding that any decision you make makes you less of a platform. And it certainly makes you not a protocol. And what we should want out of utilities is that utilities and anything that acts like utility become as neutral as possible, so that we can see natural phenomena and organic trends, and that they're not influenced or encouraged by the Me Too-ism, the groupthink, peer pressure, the need to fit in. I mean, this is why your electric company, you know, passively says, well, you use this month and use this much last year. Your neighbors, you know, are using this much, you know, that's all to influence your behavior. And what we need to accept is that everything from lighting to color schemes, to language, to news articles were presented. More importantly, news articles were not presented, all influence your decision-making. And if we want to reclaim consent and informed consent, then we need there to be safe spaces, spaces that are neutral. And anyone who wants to be offer a universal service, which we need in communications, needs to get out of the editorial business. And that literally means, you know, writing a description for trends is editorializing. And Twitter and Gab and Gitter should not be in the business of deciding if it's pronounced Kiev or Kiev. You know, they shouldn't be in the business of determining whether Taiwan's a country or not. They're not in the diplomacy business, you know. So they're not even, frankly, in the English business. So, you know, everybody needs to get out of this editorial business and let true opinions be unfettered, and then let platforms return to a place where, you know, it's just a soapbox in a public square.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think, you know, after the election in 2020, even starting before that with COVID in 2020, we really saw this increase in these social media, these platforms really becoming editorial all over the place. I think if I do any post on Instagram still about COVID, or the they catch the word COVID in something I say, or that written somewhere, even on a screenshot, I still get that content warning. You know, they still need to tell you what I'm supposed to think about COVID-19 stuff. Give me a list of resources that they've vetted. It's like we've been hit with that now for a couple years that, you know, we just want to turn, I think what you're saying is we just want to turn back the clock a little bit to how it used to be just a couple years ago, and let people discuss things and let people, you know, say their information or misinformation or whatever you want to call it. And I think I'm totally on board with you on that. One other thing.
Let me say this.
Yeah,
let
go
me
ahead.
Add this.
Go ahead.
It's not that we just want to return to how things were a couple years ago. It's how it's been done for I want to say the whole of human history, but like I don't want to take advantage of the argument. The entire set of human history in which we've had legal disclaimers. The idea of a legal disclaimer is to disclaim liability, to move it away from you. And you only have liability when there's this mathematical formula going on where the masses will participate in something, and too many of them will participate it in an uneducated way or a way that gorges it, okay? So that's why a disclaimer exists. when a disclaimer then becomes a virtue or a signal for a virtue, then it has lost its purpose away from moving liability, and instead it assumes liability. So now Instagram and YouTube are assuming liability and becoming medical doctors. And that's the opposite. This isn't Western civilization. This is all of civilization. This is an existential threat. So we literally have to know the part, and this is what makes conservatism or traditionalism great, is all we have to do is return to the purpose. We don't need to get into a fight, whether it's left or right or whether it's new or old. Does it serve its purpose or is it inverted? So ironically, we are living in a hellscape in which disclaimers are assuming liability, not disclaiming liability. And it's the most dangerous thing because, you know, if you were for, let's say you were for appeasement during World War II, and there were some reasonable arguments where people thought they could be for a time and then it got stupid, you just take the sign out. You don't put another sign that says, well, let's go to war, baby. So what we really need to do is say, you know, we need to be able to talk about what we're for and not have to talk about what we're against. And we need companies to talk about what they're for and not pretend to be against something so that they force your behavior into actually being for something. And that's all it is. It's a psyop. And the general education level for has not surpassed simple advertising tricks. And that is fundamentally the human problem we're facing right now in all of the world. It's just, there's a human problem with, we're all aware and no one's educated on what's happening to them, to the extent it's happening to them. And like I said, it's because to me that the forbidden fruit was game theory. We bit into that and it's like, okay, I'm going to get one step ahead. And then Cain said, I'm going to get two steps ahead. And then, you know, it's like everybody's getting further and further along until things are, you know, completely clownish. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but, you know, I'm really like passionate about law.
That's a good point.
It's like disclaimers had a purpose and now they have zero purpose.
No, I thought that, no, you didn't interrupt and that was great. I really appreciate your point there. Can you look towards the future? You know, think about like a best case scenario. Think about if Elon is able to, you know, have a guiding hand in there, and these hopes that we have for maybe how he can bring Twitter back is achieved. And then look at how that threatens the establishment or the regime or you know, the powerful forces that right now Twitter is really working for them to shape the narrative that they want. And not just Twitter, but kind of the whole of big tech. You know, we talked about that Revolver article earlier, and it's kind of a big black pill in a way, because it's really a listing of, okay, if Elon gets it and Elon does it, here's how they're going to come after him. And just a really kind of recap, what the article talks about is they say they'll start blaming the platform for its users' behavior, a la, you know, after Jan 6, what happened with Parler. You know, there was some, you know, there were terrorism on Parler now, and it was like, you know, big tech, the infrastructure took it down quickly within days. Then they talked about a coordinated pressure campaign coming from groups like the Anti-Defamation League, really influencing the direction of what the company does. They talked about exodus of the blue checks. You know, it would become an act of like defiance, you know, an activism to be like, I'm deleting, you know, do a long Twitter thread of why you're deleting your account, then you delete it. And then finally they said, they talked about like the deep platforming with the Amazon Web Services, similar to Parler, and the Cloudflare, the backbone of the internet, stuff that Gabs had to work around. And now, a lot of that sounds really extreme, and I don't think we see Elon taking Twitter to like where Gab is. But what do you see? You know, what if you look into your crystal ball? What are some things that Elon has to be really aware of, even if he just starts shifting the needle a little bit back?
Everything that's pointed out in that piece is like a realistic possibility, as far as I'm concerned. And again, like just as a Christian, and this is something I think, you know, the Q people, which kind of makes them Gnostics, is that, you know, God wins. Well, it's like God wins in the end. And then you end up litigating what's winning and what's losing, and when's God winning and when's God losing, and did you disrespect God by signing in the end? And it just becomes rather silly. But, you know, the story is pretty clear that things get dire, and that, you know, the outcome that Christians want is not ever it is one in an earthly way, because heaven comes down to earth, not because like we found the means to solve it. It's we don't ever find the means to solve it. That is, you know, the fallen state, you know, as Jesse Lee Peterson said. So in a lot of ways, when I look at black pills, the reason why I'm never black pilled is because directly on the opposite side of that is redemption or conclusion. And that's exciting for me, because I get tired of this fight. And so the idea that there would be a blue check exodus, the upside is there's no Twitter, you know, and they can't recreate Twitter, because they need us to leech off of us. And I don't think enough people can appreciate that, you know, every piece of technology and its adoption is a man meets moment type of scenario, which is why Truth Social will not be the alternative to Twitter. And it's why Twitter, if it started today, wouldn't be what Twitter is today. And so, you know, what I would say is, if I was advising Elon, is that you have to put away all that game theory. And this is the great thing I think about Elon, to embrace whatever's going to happen happens. And if you put forth your best effort, a miracle is likely to happen. And I think that's the encouraging word. Now, I will say his number one problem, and the number one problem at Twitter, and I'm going to start being a lot more vocal about this, I'm probably going to write an editorial, is the Twitter management staff and executives. They completely sabotage Jack Dorsey in ways that I've alluded to before, but I think I'm going to be more specific going forward. You know, one time I had too big of a mouth, and there were some hurt feelings. So then I shut up about everything, but now I just feel like, you know, society hangs in the balance. Why not? So I think what I would do if I was Elon is I would try to shake as many of those people voluntarily out as possible. Basically, he's got to get rid of every executive. There aren't good executives there. There just really aren't. And I don't mean any disrespect. I just mean that they're, you know, talentless tools of Satan. And
disrespect. So, just
yeah, no disrespect.
Talentless tools of Satan. I like that. But, I like that.
You know, and Jezebels. Don't forget the Jezebels. And so, you know, what Elon, I think, is going to have to do is to choose what his compromise will be. And if I'm looking at this, if I was trying to insulate myself, then the compromise that he needs to make, in my opinion, is the compromise that Elliott Management and some of these other hedge funds want, and that's in advertising. Right now, Twitter's not capable of competing at a fraction of the level that Facebook is with advertising or data collection. And again, because there's also a man meets moment where the Facebook today wouldn't be able to collect as many data points as the Facebook yesterday collected if Facebook was started today. So in a lot of ways, Elon can ensure a lot of speech if he either finds ideological billionaires to stand with him, and there is enough. That's the good news on that. I don't think that they will. Or he needs to find hedge funds that, you know, are interested in the advertising and will defend him and insulate him and his and the stake that he has and the influence he wants to have. And so I think the number one thing is you just got to be aware of the staff. They're Jezebels, harpies, Satanists. They're not that talented. Recruiting at Twitter, you know, means you're not working at Google. It means you're not working at Facebook. It means you're not working, frankly, now at Microsoft, or, you know, there's a lot of other companies that are ahead of them. So if you're working at Twitter, you know, no offense, you know, you're not the most talented person anyway. You know, the question is, you know, do we get worse talent, and how do we get better talent? And without more revenue, we're not going to be able to, you know, get more talent. And And that's been a real problem for Twitter. And so fundamentally what we have to accept is that Twitter is dead. And anybody who wants to make Twitter great again is not going to do it in the way that it's been presented to us. It might mean the future, everyone's a paying member. Well, that's not going to be the Twitter we all knew and love. It's going to be something. I don't know that it'll work, but, you know, it'd be something. Or it might mean that, you know, Twitter has a lot of ads or wants to collect a lot of information on you before you enter. But your information is portable and you own it and there's time-based suspensions and you feel like you're more a part of it. So I don't know. The staff is the number one thing to look out for because, I mean, these people will sabotage. You know, the great thing, though, is that they are more scared of investors than they are CEO. And, you know, when you think about Jack being a founder CEO who's technical, a technical CEO founder, and they were still willing to sabotage him. Well, all he did is defend them. He's never said a bad word about them. You know, he doesn't say a bad word in private about them. He should, you know, but, you know, that's him. This is me.
Well, you know, I think number one, I think there's been a lot of speculation around like Jack Dorsey and like what he really thought and felt, like why it was that it seemed like maybe he was powerless to keep Twitter going in a certain direction that people thought maybe he was more in line with, right? Was he just too weak of a leader? Was he too, you know, there's been speculation. And the other thing is that the idea that a company could make such poor decisions that I think really impact the soul of the company, right? To where it's like, hey, it's dead. The question is whether or not a company can radically shift, backtrack, do things differently, and get that mojo back, which again, when I think about the mojo, it's just that it was this unique space where regular people, you know, could speak to like powerful people, celebrities, engage in a way that was really crazy. I mean, listen, I even go back, Ali, I think about how we got involved in the Stop the Steal doc together. It was your Twitter. I didn't know you. I cut a little video, tagged you in it, and you messaged me, and that's where it all began. And it was like, that was the magic of Twitter. And it's like, there were so many things about it. And again, your point is about man meets moment or a product entering at a certain period of time. You know, Twitter got its real launch at South by Southwest here in Austin, you know, all those years ago. And it was at a certain time in the internet and social media before it had shaped culture. And so we're in a different time now. We're in a time now where we can look over our shoulder and see all of the great things and all the terrible things and all of the ways that social media and big tech has been compromised or is being compromised or is being destroyed by the regime and the establishment and government and how they're working together. Like we see all of these cautionary tales and all these great things. And now there's these other services and platforms and people with great suggestions about how to preserve that soul in other platforms going forward. So I guess all of that to say, there is an opportunity for it to be resurrected. There is an opportunity for it to sort of have a comeback. It's going to take a certain kind of leadership. It's going to take a certain kind of philosophy, and it's going to take a certain kind of courage, frankly, to recognize that this is something that I think people want, and that it's been a loud, vocal, you know, squeaky wheel minority with a political agenda and a lot of backing from dark sources, you know, that have gotten it to move off its original, you know, mojo. And that's true for a lot of companies. And so I hope that moment and that magic can come back or something new will rise that meets this new moment.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting because, you know, when I look at even media, it's like Twitter was the universal status updater. And like you said, kind of the moment was that a lot of us, you know, millennials and Gen X were overwhelmed by the industrialization and the perfection of social media that Facebook did, that MySpace and Friendster attempted. And so, you know, in the wake of Tumblr and the endless Google experiments that failed, and Facebook and all this other stuff, there was Twitter saying, we're going to take the dumbest feature of Facebook and make it the only feature. And everyone liked that because there was less pressure. And then it acted as a magazine where there was a lot of discovery. Truth Social will never have that. Gab does not have that. Getter sure as hell is never going to have that. One thing I don't, I walk into Getter and it's like Seattle or the Detroit airport. I'm like, am I in a foreign country? That's bad discovery. It's like, I don't want to run into Chinese people. I don't want to run into, whatever. I like that Brazil is doing its little Bolsonaro thing, but like, I really don't care what's happening in Brazil. And like, but you can tell, like, I don't know how detailed I want to go, but,
Oh, we want you to go very detailed.
Well, it's like, you just have to sit there and think. It's very hard because even when you become an expert in thinking this, it's very hard to do it. But what I will say is that as we talked about the editorializing of content and why that's even bad and why you're in a precarious position as a tech CEO when you even retweet people. And as we saw with Truth Social, they just lost 3 staffers and they're still on the platform. It makes it in a very precarious position. We've never had to solve this problem. It's not like when someone got fired from AT&T, they asked, do you still have the service?
Right.
So we're in a kind of a first ever in human history and the civilized world and the industrialized world. And my point is that Getter released a cool new feature today that auto translates subtitles on live streams. Okay. Again, that assumes a thesis that has never been proven, and most theses are wrong. And again, I think that they lack kind of an intellectual understanding of what a platform is and isn't. And the discovery feature on Twitter was what was amazing. I came for politics and tech. I ran into some comedians. I ran into some whatever. And I never had to add more in my basket than felt comfortable for my personality. And because I follow like personal friends or friends in the industry, their recommendations meant a lot more to me.
Yeah.
And they knew to tag me and stuff or not tag. So the number one thing people are forgetting is that there's never been an organic discovery recommendation engine like Twitter. Google didn't accomplish it, still hasn't. Facebook didn't accomplish it, still hasn't. And they had more data points on what you liked and didn't like. Eventually you like so many things that you couldn't see all the pages that you like. This is why they invented the algorithm, by the way. Mm. So they were so successful at cataloging people, people stopped getting served the content that they wanted. This is good because, it disrupts the matrix a little bit. But so you can see how decisions, or like when Gab decided we want to run a parallel economy and then they launched the marketplace feature. Okay. Which I'm very happy that they did, but no one's using it. So sure. It's like people really have to understand, while they can attack Torba and they can attack Dorsey and they can attack Miller, these are very hard decisions to make. You have to bet on a thesis, and it's just not a feature I'm rolling out. You're controlling hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars in an investment into features and time and investment in emotional energy that your staff feels when they build something. And it's a dangerous game, which is why I'm saying, people, get out of that business. Just become a performance engine that delivers us the content we want. And we, the human beings, we will solve the rest. We will absolutely solve the rest. We invented hashtags. We invented retweets. Right. We invented the word tweet. Twitter didn't do any of that crap. The users did that. We did that. And so in a lot of ways, and Gab kind of does the best job of this, but in a lot of ways, the platforms need to get the hell out of the way. Mm. And the failure to recognize that while pretending you're a Twitter alternative is just to engage in this really, really, really weird, ego. It's like the shadow self. You're messing, I don't want to turn into Jordan Peterson, but you're really you're really saying more. What you're really saying is I should be running Twitter. Okay. Well, Twitter sucks. Okay. Twitter sucks. And so I want Twitter to die. I want a new Twitter to come back. You know, when Jesus came back, he still had the holes, you know? And so it's like, that's what I want. I want the battle worn Twitter that says never again. You right. know? And that's what I want. That is what I want. And so, anyway, I think it's like I want Elon to say Trump should come back. And then Trump's first tweet to be Twitter effing sucks. You know? And like, and that's what I would like. That's the world I want to live in. And so, and it's the world that we're all the safest. So anyway, I don't know if that all made sense, but not enough people. The number one thing, I think, not the number one thing, one of the things that I think I miss the most about something the West has never been good at, but tried to be good at, and the East is frankly better at, is we need some restraint. We need some discipline. And the man who understands that he wants to be, you know, a titan of industry or a patron of communications platforms or news, will get the hell out of the way, and will seek to actually take himself out of the process. Because if he is the biggest cheerleader of the platform, then the platform will only be as big as its cheerleader.
Sure.
And it will actually balkanize itself, and that's not what you want.
Well, Ollie, I got one final question for you. You know, you said Twitter sucks. Agreed. You said you want Twitter to die and you want a new Twitter to rise up. And so my question for you is, do you want to be on that Twitter? Will we see you back on Twitter if you're allowed back on?
Yeah, yeah. And then I'd love to get kicked off again if it still sucks. So, you know, I don't want Twitter to program me. I want to program Twitter, and I want it to be a fair game where everybody, the best programmer wins. And then that's how culture should form. And at the essence of what liberalism promises and doesn't accomplish is that, you know, at the essence of a constitutional republic or democracy, you know, what we seek to accomplish is that the majority rules and that it's safe for the majority and that it's not too oppressive for the minority. And that's you know, what's not being achieved by, you know, the modern society in the current year. And so, you know, I think a lot about it, and our challenges are just enormous and overwhelming. But the only way to make things right is to attempt to do it the right way, to attempt to do it unabashedly the right way. And if we destroy institutions in the process, we should celebrate that. If we lose in the process, we should celebrate what we learn. We should celebrate the virtue that comes in giving our all. But, you know, this doomer black pill stuff is just it's worse than the enemy. It's worse than the enemy. It tells you not to fight. It tells you to never win, because to have won, you have had to have failed and learned. And so it's just a really immature, you know, non-virtuous thing.
Ali, I think I said last question or something like that, but we just got two super chats just came in, so I want to throw them at you. There Feel you free go. To be as brief as you want to be with this. This first one's from Ivor Sims.
You got to plug the super chats.
That's right, man. We can't scam our super chats in week two on Cozy here. This is from Ivor Sims. I think we kind of covered this, but the question is, how likely do you think it will be that Elon mixes things up? So let me rephrase that. Do you think it's a certainty that Elon's going to come in and do some sort of shakeup here?
Yeah. You know, again, we know he didn't buy the stock to flip it. Okay. So we know that. We know that he intentionally bought under 10%, but bought, I believe, over 8.5 or 8.6, whatever Vanguard owns. So he bought the title.
Yeah,
this is how bad news media is. I mean, I remember being able to log on and read articles with people who had a working expertise of things, and there it was in the headline. There's not one article that is pointing out that, you know, for whatever his plans are, this amount was used for this reason.
Gotcha.
And then they would have to, again, the journalists would have to kill their ego to understand Elon as a character archetype. It's like, well, Ali's claim matches up with this trollish behavior we've seen him do everything else. Huh. And then you wouldn't have stupid fucking, pardon my, I gave up cussing for Lynn, but you wouldn't have stupid journalists writing, well, his Form 13B says that he's not going to take an activist role in the company. It's like, it's mind numbing. It's just mind numbing. I mean, there's an opportunity to make money, but you know, it's just mind numbing to be around this much stupidity. I mean, if you work at Bloomberg, your whole job is to understand the business sector. Your whole job is to understand Elon Musk and these forums. And you have not pointed out that this multi-billionaire bought a title. Yeah. And like I said, you know, how significant that is or isn't, who knows? But it is the best capture of his mindset that we have, absent him telling us as a primary source. Yeah. And there's nobody who captured that. So I'd say we're 100% sure that Elon is going to do something. How successful that will be, not be. Let me put this in context, though, for determining if you're modeling what success looks like. There was a problem in Twitter, and Jack was on the outside. And Jack is the person who came up with Twitter. And, you know, he has three other co-founders, but, you know, two ones that people focus on. And there's this guy named Dick who's running the company. And the Saudi prince, who we don't like, comes in. And I say we, meaning the Trump populist, right? He comes in and he buys $300 million of Twitter stock, which gives him 5% control of the company. Boom. They fire Dick. They put in Jack. 5% of the company. Okay. And I have this clown on Gab saying, this is what I do for a living. What are you talking about? He doesn't have any special rights. It's like, okay, well, whatever. And so, so that's the first fight we could focus on. The second fight is a fight that happened in 2019 and 2020, where Twitter reached a settlement with Silver Lake and Elon or Elliott Management. And I believe they were at 5% or lower. Maybe it was as low as 2%. Someone in the chat room can look it up. And, you know, that that was billions of dollars in transactions, and it's a complicated deal. But, you know, they got new board seats and stuff like that. So by any measure, Elon is holding double the percentage that the two last successful activist investors used. Mm. They didn't have, like, Elliott Management has a good reputation in the business community, so they can get articles at Bloomberg and CNBC and stuff like that. Elon is a trillionaire in earned media.
Sure.
A trillionaire.
Sure.
He doesn't even need any shares. He's the largest shareholder who has beat the SEC again and again and again, can attract new capital or use his own capital to buy the whole damn thing.
Yep.
And people are asking me whether he wants to do anything with this or what the probability of him winning is. This is someone I wouldn't bet against. Twitter is a tiny, impotent company. It is a subsidized newspaper. Twitter is probably always going to be a subsidized newspaper, whether it's publicly traded or it goes private, you know, and it probably isn't going to be a publicly traded company forever. But you know, it will be around for a very long time, and it's super annoying. And, you know, until we get to the decentralized status updater that we see, like the Fahrenheit 451 movie and all these other movies, you know, that's predictive programming, we are going to have a universal status updater in which all of humanity, you know, you create a wallet address and boom, you have access to all these satellites that tax you a small percentage or a small transaction fee so that you can talk to people on Mars and Venus and all this other stuff. That's just going to happen, you know. And what was that show on Amazon? It starts with the E. The space show.
I know what you're talking about, and I haven't watched it, and that's why I don't know the name.
Yeah. Anyway.
It's on my list.
So anyway, we are going to have a universal status updater is what I'll call it. And that's coming, folks. You know, Twitter's the first attempt at it. So Twitter will survive that or Twitter will become that, which makes you wonder, through the game theory, is that why
Oh, it's The Expanse. It's The Expanse. Chat helped
Expanse,
us out.
That's yep. what it is. Yeah.
Thank you, chat.
This is coming. It's in hundreds of movies. And you know, sometimes, like, I was talking to a client, and a lot of people don't notice it. So, you know, but it's coming. And so it makes you wonder. It's like, and this is the number one thing I've told people about Jack. You can love him or hate him. And most people do not like Jack Dorsey on the left and the right. And, but he is a visionary, and people don't like hearing that. But the guy is always living 10 years in the future. And that's why he's so zen in the present, because he's just not here.
Yeah.
Well, he's just not here.
One thing that's interesting when you talk about the universal status updater and Elon taking this stake in Twitter, I'm like, oh yeah, he's got Starlink. Hey, yeah, this could be this. That I see that now. If I can look further into the future, I understand. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
It's going to go interplanetary, possibly. We'll see how these initial steps go. But
and remember, you know, Elon the libertarian, and then those Starlinks, and then all of the regulations that big tech is facing. I mean, big tech, and this is the genius of Satoshi and the genius of Jack and the genius of Elon, is that if, you know, there is a singularity coming for how we deal with corporations in general, but it will hit the tech sector first.
Sure.
And it will, everyone will participate in the way that they do with torrents in communications, because it's all about to be regulated out, all of it. Mm. So that's why I call Twitter a subsidized newspaper. And so that's why there's a huge mistake that the right wing alternatives are making. They just don't even realize they're letting you in so that you can't participate in it. You'll participate in the crash. So, you know, it's like you have to study a lot of history. You got to study a lot of, you know, what these bankers have been doing, and the cycles, you know, these various, you know, the countries that were the capitals of the world and stuff, and the capitals of capital. And, you know, we can all praise universal access, but it always precedes the end. And so, you know, that's why I call Elon a gray hat, because I think a lot of people are going to be connected with their crypto wallet to Starlink and accessing whatever the hell they want to access. And a lot of governments are going to have a problem with that.
Yeah.
And they will have to choose to shoot those satellites out of the sky or not. And then humanity will have its response.
Yeah.
Well, Ali, I got to tell you, because of the beautiful nature of Cozy, what happened just moments ago, a really large stream ended. Dalton Claude Felter was interviewing Nick Fuentes. That stream ended. A lot of viewers came here, and now chat's lighting up, and we got a couple extra super chats. So if you're happy to stay for a while, we got a kind of a brand new audience, and we got a lot of chatter and a couple of super chats. This one is not so much a question. It's a compliment to you. Anonymous says, great guest. Hope he gets on Cozy. Miss the classic Ali Periscope streams. So this is an Ali old head, as they say here on Cozy.
You know what's really interesting is almost dying and then like coming back as something different. And you know, it's gonna be fun. I mean, I've kind of accepted it. I told a friend this last week, is I've accepted the fact that I'll probably get 15% of my old audience back.
Yeah.
Now maybe I'll get a lot more, but that's what I'm working with now. And so I was like, okay, so that means when I launch, there's a lot of reintroductions. There's a lot of like, how do you know Jack Dorsey? Why are you wearing orange? And all this, you know, bull crap that I'm gonna have to deal with. But I need to be proactive in shaping my own narrative, and not assume that, you know, people, you know, can explain why I'm an influential presence. And so, and it does bother people. They're like, why is he so influential if he's not humongous, but he still generates enough chatter? And people, you know, they naturally get suspicious of that. So anyway, I've been thinking like, it's just going to be really fun, because, and we've talked about, you know, amusing ourselves to death before, and how messages and mediums, you know, influence one another. And so it's like, when people are like, well, why isn't he already on Cozy? Because it will so shape what I say. And I've also got other things going on in life, like January 6th legal stuff. So it's like,
heard about that.
Yeah, so I'm doing
a little something going on back there.
It's like, okay, do I want to be the cozy Ali? Well, you know, they're choosing whether to crucify me, or do I want to be the, you know, elusive Ali?
Well, listen, anytime you want to be the cozy Ali, you got a spot here with the Cancel Proof podcast. Open door.
Open door.
Anytime.
Friend of the show.
When you upload this to Spotify and Apple stuff, you're going to need to bleep out the retards and the fats.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No question about it. Yeah. We're amazed we're still on those platforms, to be honest. There was some heavy editing that we've had to do recently there.
Yeah.
So we keep it safe. We keep it safe for those platforms. Another super chat came in. Iverson again said, Elon just tweeted a poll. And that poll on Twitter, I guess, apparently is, do you want an edit button? Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, totally against it. I think that Elon and Jack should talk really quickly. We'll nip that stuff in the butt. I will say, I have this list of demands that during my first meeting with Jack, you know, fighting for conservatives. And I'll say this, of my demands, there's like 24, I think I had. And he said, we'll sit here and answer all of them until you're satisfied. And that was shocking. And then half of them, it turns out, weren't actual problems on the suppression side, or whatever you want to call it. They were actually technical problems that just hadn't been fully fleshed out to the public, which really makes me wonder, what does the tech press do except for police speech? And then the other half were, you know, things where he gave me promises that never came true, or he gave me reasons why that would be hard. And there's a lot of agreeing to disagree. But after that was all over, he's like, you don't have anything else? I said, I'm totally against an edit button. And he said, I am too. And he told me the biggest advocate for the edit button is Kim Kardashian. And I'm totally against the edit button. It would take away from what makes Twitter Twitter. Now, I will say, it doesn't bother me that it's on Gab. But Gab doesn't have spontaneity. Gab does not create news, and no one posts exclusives there. Nick doesn't post exclusives there. You know, I don't want to pick on Nick, but there's literally no one, even the people beloved on the platform, that posts exclusives there. No one makes news there. No one has a screenshot of a Gab post in a news article. And yet there are newsworthy people on Gab. So again, there's such a failure on the right to think about these things and to program them. You can program people to do anything. And, we ought to program people to do good things and newsworthy things and disruptive things. And so I'm totally against the edit button. Everyone go vote that down. And I told that to the Truth Social team. It was the number one thing I told the Truth Social team. I said, I will leave this freaking platform if it becomes an edit button. What will essentially happen is that it will become an advertising platform. And that's fun. And it's a marketing channel. And there's going to be a lot of, you know, boomers and Q people and patriots and, you know, fun people to advertise to. But I don't want it to become another place where, you know, Charlie Kirk sells T-shirts and Steven Crowder sells mugs.
I don't see how you can have an edit button on it. Like, there's so many ramifications to it. Number one, you can't go back and unearth all those things people said necessarily. Yeah, people delete stuff, but then the thing about people deleting tweets is it's like, oh no, we got the record of that. You deleted it. The edit button's different. And then it's also like people who retweet or like it or whatever, it gets edited. Yeah. That's crazy. It's a whole situation. Now, I get it that it's like, oh, maybe it'll be an edit like for just a few minutes or something to correct that misspelling or something, but I say forget it. You cannot go that way. You've got to keep the purity of it.
Why does anyone want it? I mean, like, I'll put it this way too. Again, you know, again, I try to think of these things also, you know, an investment on their end. Do we want an edit button that says that's time-based? Well, no, because someone could copy and paste real quick. Okay, so we know we shouldn't do that. Well, what about one that examines the characters and you can only, you know, edit a couple characters, a couple spelling, and you can use AI to quickly do that? Okay, do we really want them to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on that and over you just deleting something, you lazy piece of crap? You know, it's like, No, we need to save our humanity. We don't need to become more like AI. We need to become less like AI.
There's something about it too, where it's like, hey, yeah, it is our humanness, dude. It's our misspellings. It's our not saying something exactly the way we want or whatever. Like, this is just humans being humans. You know, I was against when they expanded the character count.
Yeah,
you know,
me too.
Now they ended up doing it, and I've actually been like, you know what? Really wasn't a big deal. Actually,
me too.
It, you know, but I was very resistant to that change. Edit button, forget about it. So
I just looked it up, and Ali, I got bad news. First of all, the two answers that you can answer on this poll, one was YSE and one was ON. So a misspelling of yes and a misspelling of no. And unfortunately, the misspelling of yes is winning with 76%.
Mm. Oh, I bet.
Yeah, it looks like he's polling the audience already. I guess we didn't discuss, you know, it's funny. I was doing a stream yesterday while I was editing a documentary on Nick, and I was very clear. I said, you can chat about this with me, but I'm absolutely not taking editorial decisions from chat at all.
Yep.
And some people like backtrack, like, oh, sorry, you are the pro. And it appears that Elon may be taking some cues from his Twitter polling capabilities. But I do want to say we got a huge super chat here. So thank you, Nemonada, for the $20 super chat. This isn't even a question, Ali. This is a compliment to me. Watched the edit stream earlier today, and now this. Great content. Keep up the good work. Well, I want to blow up Cozy a little bit here. We were living in a world when we came on the air here where Dalton Clodfelter was interviewing Nick Fuentes, Baked Alaska was doing a show, Valiant News was doing a show. Those guys are great. We have you on. I mean, Cozy is truly this platform where you have a just so many options, and it's like, oh, I can't, there's three things I want to watch.
Impossible.
You got to go back. Yeah, you can't do it. You got, obviously people were watching Nick Fuentes being interviewed. That was the number one, 1,200 people or whatnot, but you got to go back to watch replays. And I mean, you know, we talked about the viewer that wanted you to come on and you coming on at some point, man, when you do make your Cozy appearance, it's just going to be more and more stuff. People are loving it, Ollie.
It'll be awesome. I'm trying to think, like, what news do I want to break so that the press gets offended, but it galvanizes the audience in particular here. Maybe me and Nick will. Maybe it should be me, Nick, and Alex Jones relitigating the hillbilly incident. Yeah, that'll be good.
And now you speak of inside the Georgia Capitol. That's what you speak of? Yeah. I don't know if our audience is familiar. Do you want to talk about that or no? Is that enough?
No.
That's enough of a tease.
They're familiar. They're familiar.
That's enough of a tease. Understood. All right, Ollie. Well, I think, man, you've been very generous with your time. It's been an hour 20 live here. We got up to 200 viewers, which is awesome. We love doing this. We love you. We love having you on. I think this was a great, really a great topic to discuss. You brought a lot of really interesting insight. You're probably the only one. You're the only one that I know that has sat in a room with Jack Dorsey and submitted him a list of demands and hashed it out with him. So that's just a really interesting sort of place that you've been in to know the guy on that level, you know, to go to bat for conservatives on Twitter, obviously eventually get banned, and we know that whole story. So really do appreciate
you. I've been twice permanently banned. So, you know.
Twice permanently.
Yeah. Yeah. In January 2019, I was permanently banned. For someone sending me a death threat, and I just let them know, hey, if you come to my house, I'm going to blow your brains out. And so I got permanently banned. But it was following. Like I said, there's so many sadistic games that the Twitter executive staff played on Jack. And, you know, and I've alluded to it, but like I'm going to start being more specific. I want to be judicious about it. But let's just say Stop the Steal 2018 happened. Then Laura gets banned, I think a month later, and then Covington happens, and then also news breaks that Jack Dorsey is talking to this conservative, whatever. And so, I mean, just type in Jack Dorsey, Ali anti-Semite. I mean, every news outlet called me an anti-Semite and called Jack to denounce me. To his credit, he didn't. So, I mean, think about this. Jack Dorsey is to the right of Ben Shapiro and Charlie Kirk and the rest of these people on this issue. Right. And I don't want to say the right. You know, he's above. He's above them. They're below. They're, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to insult Charlie so much, I guess, or I don't know. But like, but like, there was a tremendous, there were millions of dollars invested in Jack Dorsey denouncing this scary name, Ali Akbar. That's my birth name. You know, Ali Akbar is an anti-Semite. He called Jake Tapper a journalist. He is a Jewish journalist, you know, and it does affect his programming. And I was pointing out how in particular it affected his programming. And I just didn't think it was fair. I didn't say Jews are bad. I just said it was unfair.
Well, the chat thinks you're based.
you know, it's like I'm based or cringe, you know, who knows? But like, just think about this. In a lot of the ways, it reminds me of like when I called that guy a hillbilly for being a hillbilly and Nick did not denounce me. You know, Nick, you know, went to bat for me as much as he could. And it got very dangerous. You know, in retrospect, everyone agrees that the guy's a hillbilly, including Richard, the guy who is the hillbilly. So in this great fight, what we have to do is we have to find people who are invested in virtue. And when they can't find virtue, they're invested in non-persecution of everyone. And that's really all this thing is about. We don't really have the luxury of getting into our opinions about all kinds of other things. Like, we've really got to save virtue, and then we've got to save the public square, because virtue can win in the public square. It cannot win in a rigged public square. You know, I mean, this is, again, the apple, the forbidden fruit. And so anyway, Jack Dorsey didn't denounce me. So his staff banned me. They found an excuse to ban me, and Jack brought me back. So he overruled them. And so, you know, people can call him bad. And like I said, I eventually get permanently banned. But, you know, that was, I made the decision in November 2020 that I'm going to ride this train until my government and Twitter hates me. Now, I didn't realize how bad, you know, my government would come after me. But, you know, no regrets.
Well, Ollie, this has been a great time, man. I think, like Jason said, welcome to come on the show.
Did you guys Google it?
No, I didn't Google it. What was it again? What was it again?
Jack Dorsey, Ali, anti-Semite.
Okay, Jack Dorsey, Ali, anti-Semite.
Imagine the pressure he had from his comms team and all these other people. I'm not going to mention.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like, it started with the Huffington Post, and then boom, 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 boom. It was everyone else. They surprised him in an interview. Why do you follow Ali Akbar?
Newsweek, Mediaite, NY Post. Jack Dorsey defends interview with anti-Semitic alt-writer.
Wow,
yeah.
I went to war with the alt-right, by the way. I went to war. Like, Richard Spencer hates me by name, okay? You know, that tub of circle jerk, like, hates me by name, okay? They're super cringe, and it's like I got labeled. I'm a Zionist too, so now I'm gonna be less based in the chat, but you know, I'm a political Zionist.
Oh, now it's not cringe. I like that, Ollie. It's like the base to cringe meter. You're sort of teetering. You're cringe today.
Well, I'm an
based
adult
tomorrow.
There's a bunch of kids in the chat room, so you know, it's like, but,
well, this, but is like, the adult show. We're all, well, we're in our 40s over here.
Yeah, right.
I think you're a little younger, so this is,
yeah,
we're the,
I'll join you in 4 years.
We're the older guys on Cozy. Yeah. They let us in. Nick let us in. He saw something in us. I think it was a make good for doing the free documentary, and here we are.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Yeah.
They're telling me to disavow in chat. Disavow.
Hey, are there?
Listen, we're gonna be like Jack Dorsey and not disavow the anti-Semitic alt-right Ali Akbar. We will not disavow him.
Yeah, Israel first in chat. Jews rock. Yeah, you get a little bit of the we do a little groiping. It's called we do a little groiping.
Yeah.
All right.
That's so funny.
All right, my man. This has been a great time. Great chat. A lot of edits will be needed for Spotify and the rest. But if you're listening on those platforms, come over to cozy.tv/cancelproof. Follow us there. If you're in chat right now, I know a lot of the Claude Squad came over. Hit that subscribe button. You want to be, or I guess it's a follow button. Follow us here. And, you know, say some good words to Ali. Follow him on Telegram. One of my mods, can you please put the Telegram in chat? It's t.me/AliAlexander, I think. Stick that Telegram if you're not following him. Let's get him to 19,000. He's got great content. Nick obviously posted his stuff today. And we will be, you know, we'll all be probably looking back on this show in a week and realizing we either got a lot right or a lot wrong. Because I think things are probably going to move pretty quick with Elon.
We'll see.
It's
going to be a long fight.
That's for sure. All right.
Hey, the Twitter annual meeting is May 25th. It'll be really interesting to see.
Oh, wow.
What the board decides to cobble together, because I have a feeling that the agenda is going to change a little bit. I was told that the CEO, one of my friends on Truth Social, Tickle Text, she said that the Twitter CEO cut short his maternity leave. So he's now back working. So, you know, good things are happening. We're, you know, creating fires at Twitter, and everybody should just be very encouraging to Elon Musk until he fucks with us.
Well, we're going to be encouraging to him, you know, maybe not so much on the Neuralink stuff, but as far as bringing free speech back to Twitter, or just anywhere where people congregate online, I think that's ultimately a good thing. It's good for us.
And he did this.
Can I say that free speech is cringe? It's just, you know, or expression.
Right.
But, like, nobody's really for free speech.
The term.
Yeah, that's true.
I know we all pretend to be, but,
that's,
you know,
true. Well, it is interesting. I just wanted to say, you know, Elon's getting ready to have his big 15,000-person barbecue party at the new Tesla factory here in Texas this week. And so this is some big news to, like, kind of go in advance of that. So he's really shaking things up all over. And it's exciting to see.
Yeah, when is that?
I think it's this weekend. Yeah. I think it's like this.
Maybe we'll all get an invite to that.
Yeah, you know, so.
I'll be there Thursday. So, like, maybe we got to find a way to, like, hop a fence or something.
Yeah, you
that's
know.
Right. Yeah. Or do you have something to plug? Are you going on?
I'm going to go on Alex Jones' show on, I think we want to do Thursday.
Oh, right on.
You know, who knows what we'll talk about? There's a lot of things that are in the works that are horrific. But, you know, we're surviving it. I appreciate the prayers. You know, if I had a thing to do is that the thing I love most about Stop the Steal, and you guys witnessed this and filmed this, is the sheer number of people who said they were praying for me. And I literally felt it. I've been a born-again Christian for 22 years, but never in my life have I felt so protected. Mm. And, you know, honestly felt the hedge of protection. And, people would just pull me aside, can I pray with you real quick? I'm like, absolutely. There was never a time where I denied anybody an opportunity to pray with me or for me. And so it's as weird as it sounds, the number one thing I'm looking for getting back when I, you know, do the public figure thing again is like the prayers. Because, you know, what we're going through with the J6 stuff, you know, huge shout out to the people who do this with a smile on their face. You know, Roger Stone, I was friends with Andrew Breitbart, but Roger Stone takes Happy Warrior to another level. And, you know, the way that Nick has done this in his youth with tremendous grace, you know, has been great. You know, the fact that Alex Jones has not buckled, and I've never seen someone more persecuted in my entire life.
Yeah.
Alex Jones is more persecuted than Donald Trump. And so there are tremendous heroes that we're living amongst right now. And frankly, while we thought a lot of us were out of the woods, the government is actually dialing things up behind the scenes. And so on Thursday, I think Alex and I are going to try to determine, you know, how we want to respond to that and how public we want to be about it. But, you know, every time the government doesn't want us to show up together, we make sure that we give a blessing and an FU, you know, and appear together.
Yeah, that's powerful, man. Well, we love it. And it's We look to you to know kind of what's happening, like a few steps beyond. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you have a great discernment when it comes to the chess moves that are happening in the places of power, and you're very connected into the world of spiritual warfare. So there's just, I think people do well to listen to you, understand, you know, there's a reason why you've had the ear of some really incredible people over the time. And again, you as a young man, frankly, when you've built that and had that. And so we love talking to you and hearing your perspective on things. And I think it's been fun to just talk to you about something that a lot of people wouldn't necessarily think that you would have such a developed, like, set of understandings around. Well, you know, you're not just the stop the steal guy. Let's just put it that way. You have got deep knowledge in a couple of very key areas that come together and explain the world that we're living in right now, man. So it's really valuable, the perspective you bring.
I appreciate that. Yeah, man. Nice.
Yeah, definitely. And we got a lot of prayers in chat for you. A lot of people saying they're, you know, when you started talking about, they're praying for you, prayer hand emojis. There's a lot of love in chat for Ali. So he's going to be on Alex Jones' show, it sounds like, this Thursday. Obviously, you can go to Infowars.com. You can go there. Alex Jones, you can stay here on Cozy because Alex Jones has a Cozy channel. So we will see you on Cozy when you're on Alex, Ali. So that'll be cool. Yeah. Until you get your own channel, which... sounds like it's kind of whenever you want to. So we'll see on
soon.
That. All right. God bless, my friend.
God bless.